You're listening to PodcastJuice.net.
Did you know that Podcast Juice is premium content? Well, check out Podcast Juice All Access. Join today and get instant access to over 9 years of great classic podcasts, members-only shows, and more exclusive content. Go to PodcastJuice.net/All Access and join today.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to PodcastJuice.net. This is Geeked Out, and today we are going to be reviewing Interstellar. Before we get into review, let me introduce the rest of my compatriots. Mr. Sean Hill, how are you, sir?
Doing well. A week of rest. Didn't have any screenings other than Interstellar, so got my body some much-needed rest this week, but ready to get it on today.
All right. Next up is Mr. Aunt Pooh, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. I am doing well.
All right. Thank you, sir. And last but certainly not least, Mr. Q-Storm, how are you, sir?
What I'd like to say is real quick is after seeing Interstellar, I was looking forward to watching more less complicated movies like Inception.
All right. Shout out to Big Sexy. Couldn't be here today. He's remodeling or not remodeling, but he's setting up his office space for his lawyer and sports agent stuff. So shout out to him. Congratulations, sir. You're doing big thanks. All right, let's get into this. And let's be clear here. This will be spoiler, maybe spoiler heavy review. So if you don't want to know anything about this movie, which I would suggest going in, but it's up to you. You don't want to listen to this because we're not going to hold back. If you have seen the movie, then come on in. So we're talking about Interstellar, which is the new movie by Christopher Nolan. Stars Matthew McConaughey, Anne Hathaway, Michael Caine is in it, Jessica Chastain, if I'm saying her name right? Chastain?
Yep.
And since we're spoilers, Matt Damon is also in this movie. I had no idea he was in this movie, but he's in the movie. And
I think that's a huge spoiler. I think they're trying to keep him a secret.
Yeah. And they did a good job because I had no idea. The story of the movie, I'm going to give you just a very basic plot here.
I'm dying to hear this.
Yeah, right. I'm trying to do this. So the story is essentially that the Earth there's a blight going on where they can't grow a lot of food. Earth is going to be unlivable. And the mission here is that we must travel into space using interstellar travel to find another habitable planet for Earth to survive on. Essentially, that is the plot of this movie. It also plays on, it's about a father, using this in the trailers, a father has to leave his family to go try and save the world and get back to his family. That's the other, I think, sort of point of this picture. I want to go to Q-Storm first. And here's what I would like you to do. Tell us what you thought of the movie. And then give us, kind of quickly, give us some things that you like and things that you didn't like.
Okay. Overall, I would say that the movie was worth going to see. I think at the beginning that, if we think of a movie as having three acts, I think the first two acts were, there were some slow moments, but overall, I think it was, it kept you guessing and it was very intelligent. I liked all of the science, which was based, I assume, on actual science. I mean, it all sounded real to me from my limited knowledge of, astronomy, of course, but none of it sounded fake or unrealistic. I thought all the portrayals were very, all of the actors were doing their thing in the first two acts. And I thought Matthew McConaughey, I thought he was really good, right? I just like the fact that the story kept me guessing. There's a scene maybe a third of the way into the film where they land on the first planet, which is absolutely breathtaking. That was probably for me the best scene of the whole film. Then the scene, the whole film kind of devolves for me. Well, first off, it's such a mashup of so many other films. You know, 2001. There was a little bit of Grapes of Wrath. There was The Abyss. There's another film that I'm forgetting. Oh, An Inconvenient Truth. The main problem I have with the film overall is that it tries too hard to wrap everything up and link everything that we see at the beginning to the end. In other words, when they're dealing strictly with the science, and it's still science fiction, but it's all based in what I believe to be actual science, okay? But then when they try to take us into what I call the great beyond, that's always a mistake, because what happens is I just get pulled out of the film because I know that this is the director's vision of what the great beyond looks like, and it never measures up. And in this film, it really falls flat. I know we're going to spoil it, but in the third act, there's a certain event that happens with Matthew McConaughey. And I think Aunt Poo, you alluded to this as well. He goes into – can I spoil it?
Yeah, we're doing spoilers.
Okay. He goes into a black hole after jettisoning off of the space station. And that was another weird thing. I thought they were both at that point in this – I thought he and Anne Hathaway were in the same ship. Then all of a sudden, he's in a separate ship. But anyway, he jettisons himself off so that she can go off to the last planet. And he goes through a black hole. And it had me going. I was like, okay, well, this still looks interesting. I hope they don't do a Poltergeist 2 and try to show me what the other side looks like, because that will never work. And unfortunately, they did. He ejects himself, and I knew right then and there, just like I think Ampu said, I'm like, no, please don't tell me, no. Don't try to tie this thing up to the beginning of what I saw. Just let it flow organically. But no, such was not the case. So that's my main problem. It's like – If Nolan has stuck with the science that was based on reality, the whole thing would have worked for me. But at that, it just falls apart at the end when he posits what lies beyond. I keep saying this term, the great beyond, and it never is satisfying, and it particularly is not satisfying in this film.
All right,
that's my short version. I'll chop it up a little bit more sure. Once you guys give your opinions.
All right, Aunt Poo.
Well, I'm gonna have to preach for a moment. Please stay with me here. I don't mean to get esoteric, but after watching this film, I decided to go research through Wikipedia. You know everything there is accurate and truthful. And
just don't hit that edit button at the upper right corner and add your own stuff. But that's fine. Go ahead.
I'm being funny, sir. and through their limited knowledge, I looked up the black hole, relativity, time dilation, all of that stuff, and I just sat there and I'm not trying to have an argument with Q on this, but it was just curious how we had this discussion about the Bible and all these things, like, you know, he was like science, you know, they proven it, and it's like after reading that stuff, and again, this is Wikipedia, these are all theories that thus far they have yet to be proven, but they believe this all to be actual. And after seeing this movie, it's like Christopher Nolan is so pretentious. If you really thought that Dark Knight Rises was just a Mal hiccup, and then you wanted to forgive him for Man of Steel because he was just the producer – which, you know, and Q, please correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't the producer have some control over the script, or at least reads it and can say, that's not going to work?
Is that an honest question?
Yeah, it's an honest question.
Well, Sean Hill can speak to that too, but I think it depends on the level or the clout that the producer has. Some directors might say, I don't want any interference. I got to think with Christopher Nolan's cachet, I'm sure he looked at the script and it's kind of like Steven Spielberg and Tobe Hooper in Poltergeist. You know good and well Steven Spielberg was all over that film. So, yeah, I think in this case, Nolan, he had more than a little bit of say as a producer.
Thank you. So if you wanted to give him a pass for those two, with this film, you cannot do it. It's It's visually a very beautiful film. It has a really good first and second act, but that third act is just, I'm sorry, it's horrible. We're going to get into it later, but as Q described, when they were jettisoning parts of the Endurance, and the moment, I think 3 to 5 seconds into Matthew McConaughey going into that black hole, when they lingered on him and didn't go back to Anne Hathaway and where she ends up, I knew he's the fucking ghost. and I said it under my breath. I was like, he's the fucking ghost. And then 10 minutes later, when he started doing all that stuff to try to get his Murph's attention, everybody was like, he's the ghost. He's the ghost. He's the ghost. Side note, I wasn't at the Baldwin Hills Magic Johnson Theater. I was in the good theater near Manhattan Beach. So when all these people were saying, he's the ghost, he's the ghost, he's the ghost, I was like, I said that 10 minutes ago. Yeah, catch up. but like Q said, he tried to do too much, and it was too long. 2 hours and 49 minutes. He could have cut a good 45 minutes out of it. I get that the scene on what is her name? The first planet they went to, Hoth or whatever you called it, Q. That looked beautiful, but it was unnecessary. So unnecessary.
What do you mean by unnecessary? I'm sorry. I'll shut up. Go ahead.
Nah, I'm just saying unnecessary. But if you want me to go in, I just felt like that was maybe 20 minutes in the film that really could have been cut out. And there could have been a better way for them to do that 23-year jump than going through all of that to show a huge fucking tidal wave and barely escaping by the skin of their teeth.
See, I thought that was the best part of the movie for me. Those visuals were amazing to me.
Well, let him finish his review.
Nah, I'm done with that. Okay. We can go into more deep, but just overall, the two-thirds of the movie was really good. That last third was just it was like everything I hated about all prequels where, well, they have to really try too hard to tie it into because this has to happen, so we got to do all this at the end to make sure it happens, mm-hmm. either in the original film, or in this case, the beginning of the film.
All right, Sean Hill.
All right. Well, as I mentioned in my review, I walked out of the movie with a newfound respect for those that saw the original Kubrick 2001 back in 68. I knew I'd seen something special. I knew I'd seen something amazing, but I didn't quite understand most of what I saw. I echo Q sentiments. The first two acts are really good. For me, the film loses a little bit in the third act. And when I say it loses a little bit, for me, it was just I didn't really understand what was going on. Now, just because I don't understand or didn't understand what was going on doesn't make it, you know, not well done. It's just the gobbledygook just went over my head. So I still appreciate the spirit and the brilliance of the filmmaking, although, you know, again, it went over my head. I want to mention two scenes, though, for me that I really liked. One takes place, I guess, for lack of a better term, it's the bridge between the first act and the second act. When McConaughey is with his daughter and he's, you know, trying to talk to her and tell her he's leaving and she won't talk to him, you know, then he goes out, goes into his truck. And then she runs after him, she realizes, oh, no, I need to, you know, say goodbye to my dad. She goes out, she's yelling, and he can't hear. And on the soundtrack, we hear the countdown of the shuttle. And then we jump cut from him driving in the truck to the liftoff. I really like that because
I noticed that, too. That was nice, yeah.
Most times, I was expecting the big training sequences. Mm-hmm. You know, we got to – and we didn't get that. And I admired Nolan for leaving that part out because I think – I don't know if he shot it or wrote it and what took it out because it was too long. But, you know, we've all mentioned the length of the film. Now, just because the film's long doesn't mean it's bad. But in this case, I do agree with everyone. I think it does run a tad bit long. And the second scene I want to mention that I really like too, and maybe this is the father in me that really connected with the scene, but when he's watching the videos of the 20 years that he's missed, and he's just sitting there, and he just this heartbroken look on his face. And I've read a couple of views. A lot of people say he was overacting in the scene. I don't know. I don't know what you guys think. I thought it was perfect. I just thought it was just pitch perfect. There's nothing. He's literally watching his life go by him in a matter of 5 minutes. And I mean, he just overcome with emotion, overcome with sorrow, but he still has that, you know, resolve to he's got a mission. He knows it's for the greater good, but he's still suffering because of that. But overall, I enjoyed it. I gave it 3.5 out of 4 stars. I particularly liked. I had mentioned when we were talking about it initially, I said I was ready to see what Nolan was going to do with the IMAX and the IMAX format, and I would guess. He probably shot about 80% of this in IMAX, which is amazing and costly, but the money's on the screen, as they say. And I enjoyed it. Again, I don't understand it. Maybe in a few years, maybe if I see it again, I might have a better understanding for it. It may be a classic right now. We don't know it, just like 2001. But I think the only difference between 2001 and this film, 2001 didn't try to explain itself, whereas this tried to, by, like Q said, linking the events in the first act in the final act. I think, to me, that was the only flaw in it for me. So, thumbs
All right.
up.
All right. Let me give my take on this movie. So, why you gotta be honest? So, Interstellar, going into this, I only knew a little about what it was going to be based off of the trailers. As this movie starts and I get pulled into it, I'm going to go back to something Sean said. This movie, to me, I'll say it right up front so it makes sense what I'm saying. I love this movie. I loved everything about it. The reason why I love this movie and why it worked so well for me is because I am a sucker for the father, you know, whether it's the son or the daughter type of movie. And to me, that's what this movie is. It's just masked with all of, somebody said gobbledygook. It is just layered and smothered in, you know, science fiction, which is another genre I absolutely love. So it's taking two themes that I love. It's taking the father theme, which I'm a sucker for. And I'll admit, at the end of the movie, when he sees his daughter and she's older than him and the stuff that she says to him, I almost wanted to cry. I was like, damn, man. I was like, okay, I love that. And she said, you know, you ain't supposed to see, a father ain't supposed to see his child, you know, suffer or die. You can leave. Go ahead, man. Let me see my kids. I was like, damn, that kind of fucked me. I was like, okay. So I love this type of stuff. I'm going to go back to a scene that Sean said, the scene where, and I thought this was brilliant. And this is something I think Nolan is great at, when he puts these little rules in his movies. I think he did it with Inception. But here, again, if we go to this planet, every hour we stay here is what, 7 years? I was like, that's filthy. I like that. It puts a dilemma in here. They got to make a choice to do something. But when they come back and it's revealed that 23 years had passed, I was like, whoa, I like that. That's filthy. That's crazy. And when I'm like, okay, he's got to watch these videos, that was a headbuster scene to me. That was so emotional. Like, I was like, how could you imagine? You sat there and you just saw your children's whole life just go, and you missed the points, you know, and your dad died. And then the daughter never gets on the camera, right? And then she gets on the camera at the end, and the stuff that she says, I was like, damn, man. It pulled another sort of tension to me, like, this father has to get back home. And I'm thinking this movie is going to be this very esoteric. It's going to end and you can sort of make up your own mind what you think is going to happen, which I expected Nolan to do based off of Inception. So I was like, he's never going to really answer the question. I don't think of, is he going to really get back or how is he going to save people? But I'm like, I'm all here. I'm all over the place with this. Let me finish my review and we'll get.
I'm sorry,
I loved the world that he created, the Earth. He doesn't explain it very much, but you pick up things from the people talking about stuff. The whole thing with the sun at the school, I started to understand why they only have corn to eat. Why is he a farmer? Kind of get an idea how far into the future it was. Back in my day, we did this. I thought that stuff was excellent. The whole thing with the drone, I couldn't understand what was going on. And I love that because he didn't explain a lot. It was, why the fuck are they chasing this drone? Like, what, where is this coming? But it was cool. I'm like, this dude's just driving through the crops. This is crazy. But it was
on a flat tire.
Yeah, and I was like, but this is great. I was like, this is great, man. It's not like ridiculousness, pseudo mess. I just thought it was just dope sci-fi. I was like, this is cool. And so I loved all of that. Getting to and then the mystery of like the coordinates and are there aliens talking to him? I feel like this movie threw a lot of stuff out there and it kind of like forgot certain things, like they stopped mentioning certain things. But all through my mind as I'm watching, I'm like, they've shown you that there is somebody else talking to these people, because even though they sort of forget about it, I'm always in my mind, they need to answer how he got the coordinates to get to that secret base. And at first he just plays, you know, his gravity, and then they just don't really go into it. But then I also remember the girl said, the thing said, stay. And that stuck with me. So when he goes off into space, I'm like, they still got to answer that shit. Either they're going to show that there's some aliens, or there's got to be some reason why they did that, even though they're not mentioning Harley anymore. And then the part when they're going through the wormhole and the girl shakes, somebody's like grabs her hand or something. I'm like, and you know, another movie I love, Contact. This movie reminds me of Contact. Even Matthew McConaughey's in both. But I was
there's
like,
that. Yep.
I was like, okay, they're showing you there's some other stuff. And I figured the movie out at the point that when Michael Caine died, his character died, and said it was a lie. I said, you know what? And they you know, the story sort of shifts to show more of the story from the daughter's point of view. I said, at this point, the ghost is the dad. I knew it right at the gate. I said, yeah, it was him. It has to be him. I don't know how they're going to do this, but it only makes sense. Why would the aliens tell her to stay? Because it doesn't make any sense then for them to go on a journey unless Matthew McConaughey tells her to stay and is trying to get him not to. So I figured it out at that point, but I was like, this is dope. I want to see how they do this. And the way that they show it, I was like excited because I knew nothing else was going to happen until they answered that. Or that there was going to be aliens, which I didn't think they were going to do. So when they get to that part at the end, and the whole part where he goes to the black hole and all that, that was my favorite part of the movie. That whole end part was my favorite. I'll tell you why. One, because it's corny. And I'm a sucker for corny stuff. Two, because I was caught into it on an emotional level, because I wanted to see the dad win. I wanted to see him get to his kids. I didn't know how that was going to make that possible. But I was like, it's got to be. So when he goes into the black hole and then they show the bookshelves, I was like, you know what? That's filthy. This is just something he had to just create. It's not real. Right. That's why I said this is science fiction. And it's interesting to me that people are so caught up on, is this real science? Again, this is a science fiction movie. None of these movies are real. And I think somebody said it's all based on theory. So it's not real. So I was like, of course, nobody's ever went through a black hole. They don't know what's over there. So it's fantasy, right? I don't believe those robots was R2-D2. That to me was like, this is a fantasy movie. Ain't no damn way in hell you got transformable robots and you accept that, but you can't accept this. So I was like, it's fantasy. And I loved it because I was like, they niggas got R2-D2s in this movie and they're funny. And I was like, they talk like humans. They sound ridiculous. But it's like, well, there's no way it could be real, but it's dope. It's AI. I'm going to finish up real quick. So the ending, I love that when he did the whole book thing. Is it corny? Is it not make sense? There are holes in the plot. Yes. Like, how does she just sort of all of a sudden realize to go get the watch? I didn't care. To me, it was like, this is great storytelling. It's just fantasy sci-fi. I love this. I'm like, how can they make this movie? This is great. The very end, when he goes and meets his daughter. So before that, when he wakes up, this nigga's at the Citadel. And for those who know, like, Mass Effects and all that, I was like, they just put this shit in the movie. It's filthy. Like, it was like, What was the one with Matt Damon last year?
Elysium.
You know, had the thing. I was like, the Citadel is the same type of thing. I was like, that's filthy. I don't know how this is real, but I don't care. This is dope to me. I'm like, he's woken up in the future. And then he's like, yeah, you're going to meet your daughter. And she's like this whole famous person. Mm. I'm like, that's like, this is hilarious. And then the last part that gets me, he's walking through the hangar base. And I'm like, then they got X-Wing fighter pilots, fighter planes. I was like, this is crazy. And I'm like, he actually gets in one and he puts R2-D2 in the back. I was like, oh, man, I'm done. This is dope. This is my kind of movie all the way. And he's going to fly off to go get his princess on the other world. I was like, oh, I'm good. This is my movie. I love this movie. Is it too much for certain people? Yes. Is it all over the place? Yes. But for whatever reasons, as of right now, I love this movie. If I watch it again, it may fall apart for me, as some of his movies do.
It will.
But I walked out of there with a heavy heart. I walked out thinking, damn, man, time is no joke. You got to spend all the time you can with your family. I walked out wanting to talk about what I saw in terms of, you know, the time travel and the flights and all that. It was the type of movie that demands you to talk about it. So I, like I said, I love the movie. Now I'm done. Now we can jump in and really go into other stuff. Q Storm, you have some things else to say. What's your thoughts?
Wait, hold on. Can I say something real quick?
Go ahead.
Because you touched on the it's about the father and the daughter. Mm-hmm. It's masked and it's sci-fi. I was with you until you realized he did all of that to get back to see his children and spent 2 minutes before she sent them away. And it just felt kind of flat. Like he did all of this to get back to his kids. And it was like, oh, hey, little touch, a little about 2 minutes worth of conversation. And she like dismissed him. And I was like, what the hell was that?
Well,
it's like
I
they
think,
rushed that. They rushed that whole thing.
I think this is my theory on this. I think it was a matter of kind of she said it. She didn't want him to see her like that. So
that was hard. And I was surprised that he took that as well as he seemed to. He didn't seem to get emotional at that part, but I took it as him. I was like, imagine your child saying that to you, but who would ever imagine being in a situation like that? Because we've never had that situation. But I didn't think they rushed it. I just thought that, wow, one, she's older than him. So she's obviously a little wiser than he is. And she had the wise enough to say, you know what? This is a time for me. This is how I read it. This is a time for me to be with my children. Almost like you've missed that. But I'm, you know, yeah. I just wanted you to come and see me, but then you have to leave. Your time is over. And the whole thing was about time. That's just how I took it.
Yeah, that's kind of what I meant, too.
I guess you guys are a lot wiser than me. Because I was just like, you build to this moment, and then it's like, okay, now get the fuck out.
Well, and you said it was too long, so had he fleshed this scene out more, you would have that would have padded the running time, right?
And I was actually surprised they even put that in the movie, because I just thought they were just going to end it like he would just float it off into space and you never got a resolution. So I was shocked. I was like, they're actually going to tie this in a bow, for better or for worse. And I actually
Lord of the Rings did.
Yeah. Just for me, like I said, I can agree with a lot of the points that you guys are saying, totally. But it just didn't feel that way for me. But as I was watching, I could see, I was like, I could tell this movie is going to be so divisive to people. You're either going to sort of really get into it, or you're going to be like, half of this is some bullshit.
But let me just jump in here. First of all, that whole scene that what I call the Captain America Winter Soldier Redux scene.
Hmm.
Okay, no one got that. Damn.
Yeah, I get it. The Peggy Carter scene, right?
Yeah. All right. Some of them don't. Okay. Anyway, I mean, there are filmmaking techniques that you can that he could have used, as opposed to her sending him off because it's not his time. I mean, he could have simply done a tight shot of him grasping her hand and then done a dissolve. And then, you know, I don't get the finality either of why she said, well, you got to get the fuck out of here because I want to see my kid.
Well, she said,
what do you mean a dissolve?
I'm saying, why was it written that she why was that line written in the script where she is so final with him? This is, I need to be with my kids. You shouldn't be here to see me die, so leave. Why was that necessary? You could have simply had she could have delivered her monologue and then done a dissolve out of the shot into the next scene, and it would have been ambiguous. I don't see why that was necessary.
Well, I think I can see what you're saying. I just think it would have felt different, not whether it's better or for worse. I just say, for me watching it, it was emotional that when she did that, I was like, damn, that's, to me as a dad, it's like, you know what? You passed your time. If she had said nothing, then I would never really have got that. I was just like, oh, he finally got to see his daughter and it's all good. But I like that he put that in there. Was like, you know what? Because she was smarter than he was, obviously. And she had experienced more than he is in his life. And I just think that, again, I'm reading into this. The wisdom of her and her life experience outweighed his. And she was able to be almost a father or parent to him.
How do we know that her life outweighed his?
Well, because she's lived longer and has done way more in her life than he had at that point. He was still the same person. She had obviously transcended him.
But he saved Earth. that's
true, and she even puts that, and she says that to him. She says, no one ever believed that, but I know that you did. I mean, she addresses that in what she said. So we as a viewer know that he knows it. But she still has lived longer than him and has many more kids and has experienced life. And this is how I just read it, is that she is saying, you know what? You need to go. Like, and then she didn't say it in a cold way. She's like, Dad, I wanted you to see me.
But would a daughter ever tell? Why?
Well, who knows, right?
I know this.
She moved on. You know, I mean, for lack of a better phrase or term, you know, she moved on from that
family. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, it does.
I mean, it doesn't. It can be done. I mean, not saying it's right or wrong.
I think the thing is to say again, she has experienced life. She's ready to die.
What's that got to do with...
What does it have to do with her telling him? Because, again, the time... And, again,
let me finish my statement, though.
Oh, right? Okay. Sorry, man. Go ahead.
What does that have to do... I mean, I don't... So what if she's... She looks like she's in her 80s, and Matthew McConaughey looks like he's in his mid-40s.
Mm-hmm.
So what if she is older than him, and he's going to see her... he's going to see his daughter die? Why would you want to cherish that time? It doesn't. I mean, I know this can never happen, at least not for another maybe 100 years in real life, would this ever happen? But to me, this goes back to arguments we've had before. There's certain sciences, certain human behaviors that ring true and some that don't. And no one can convince me that just because I'm going to outlive my child, that my child's going to say, I don't want to see you. You need to leave. Your time has passed. That doesn't ring true as a human behavior to me.
Not everyone reacts the same way to situations, though. I mean, that's saying everyone's the same, and, you know, they're not.
Under what circumstances would you expect your daughter to tell you, I think you should leave?
Well, again, I'm going to try to answer your question.
I'm asking Sean.
Oh, excuse me. Damn.
No, I'm just saying.
I can't think of a situation like that, but that doesn't mean a situation like that couldn't happen. Let's say, I don't know, I rob a bank and I'm put in jail for.
That didn't happen here. Know. Come on now.
But you're asking me what situation would you do, and I'm giving you a hypothetical. The movie's not real, okay, right? The movie's hypothetical.
That hypothetical does not play into what happened on screen. He wasn't a mass robber or a thief or a felon.
So you're asking me to defend the motivations of a movie character, right?
A movie character that if we buy into the character because the character is someone who comes off as a realistic three-dimensional person, yes.
I gave you my theory. She moved on. She lived her life. She, as Mike said, she wants to spend the time with her family, her kids.
I'm sorry, I have to agree with Q on that. That scene just really didn't work for me. It's like it's been first we got to, according to the plot, Matthew McConaughey was 33 in that movie.
Okay.
So you have to remember that. The other thing is it's just like it was they both wanted to see each other. She realized that first she had that period of him leaving. Then she felt like you abandoned him. Then she had the thing that he knew that there was no coming back and he just left her to die. And then she realized that all that time it was her dad that was contacting her. So she had to come to that realization. He really loved me and he tried to do whatever he could to save us. So when they finally find her and they revive her, her thing was, it's like, I wanted to see you, now leave because you shouldn't see this. It's like, I mean, I get the sentiment, but I just think that there could have been something more lengthy. Was she dying right then and there? I mean, it just needed some, I'm sorry, for me, it just didn't seem realistic that he got 5 minutes with his daughter and that she sent him away.
I'm indifferent about the scene, I guess. It's not that it didn't work. It's not that it worked. I just thought it was just another scene in the movie. I didn't really read any deeper context to it. So,
yeah, like I said, for me, I like the scene. I can understand your viewpoint on it, but again, I think she sort of drew on a cultural saying that, you know, a parent shouldn't outlive their, you know, kids. I think that was one of the things that, to me, she drew on when she said that statement. And I think her point was to say, you know what, you shouldn't outlive me. You shouldn't see me die. It's something a parent normally shouldn't see. Now, I have kids, or at least I'm alluding, that's what she implied. So let me see my kids. So I'm not doing the thing that you kind of did. That's just how I took it. And again, it worked for me. You know, I can't defend it in the way that Q was saying, but again, it didn't pull me out of the movie. Like I said, for me, it was one of the best scenes in the movie. It was like a tearjerker to me when he did get to see her.
Why couldn't he have just stayed in the room? I don't understand that. I don't understand it.
Well, again, like I said,
we're on the same page, Q. We on the same page.
We agree that, again, it could be played either way. But any other things in the movie?
The thing I had an issue with is the whole – this is why Back to the Future is the greatest time travel movie of all time. This whole space-time continuum is just ridiculous because it makes you really – I'm not going to say suspend your disbelief, but you're going to have a brain freeze trying to figure out, wait a minute. So they sent them up there, but in order for him to go up there, he had to have gone up there and left these cues. And so did he fail at some point? And now he would fail as far as getting Earth saved. That whole sequence was just like, why you shouldn't have did it. You should not have done that.
They explain that though, Ann, if I understand your question, is that, I mean, basically, I guess he created I don't know what the term is that Star Trek might use, but he created a loop, a chronological loop or something, because he says that construct that he was in, this is what I heard, that was created by an evolved humanity. It was another dimension where we figured out that time is also a physical dimension. So even though she was a little girl, seeing the books fall off the shelf, it didn't matter.
Okay, but here's the thing I tell you. The Earth was going to die, correct?
Right.
So my question is, in order to the humanity to have saved itself, somebody had to go up into the black hole in order to leave all that. So, so my theory is if it's him, how the hell did he get there? If he had to leave himself the clues, how did humanity create this space? Because that's what I'm saying. It's the whole time period.
You got to get right. That's the thing, and that's what you're tapping into. What my issues are, even though they may be scientifically accurate, my mind or the average mind might not buy into the fiction of it. But if you don't see time as a linear aspect, remember the guy, he took the piece of paper and drew two dots on either end of the paper, and he said you can warp time by folding the paper. The paper is the universe. The two dots are, you know, point A and point B. You fold the paper and it becomes one.
Right, right.
That means everything in the infinite future and everything in the infinite past are one. So if you can wrap your head around that, then you have to.
I can wrap my head around it. The only thing I can't wrap my head around it is Matthew McConaughey being the one to send Matthew McConaughey into space.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's the only issue I got. You can't be the creator and the created.
I don't think Matthew McConaughey was the one who sent himself into space. It was NASA, right?
No, he left them the binary code to find NASA. Matthew McConaughey in the black hole left the binary code for them to find it, to find NASA. So how did he get there if he himself sent the message?
It's that whole, again, it's, I hear what you're saying, man. I'm just saying.
So he failed there.
You know what? And then on top of that. Let me just address that. I think if we go back and watch it, I'm curious. At that scene when he is in the bookshelf.
Right.
I'm wondering now, I don't remember, does he give the coordinates first before he gives the message to stay?
Yes, he did.
So that's kind of why
he was playing with the dust. He was playing with
the dust. So I think that's why he was able to send himself to do this and then try to, well, I don't know if you asked this, but he actually was trying to stop himself from going after he did that. I guess after he realized that was not going to work or something. It is a lot of madness. And confusing, but I think if you look back at that scene, he gives himself the coordinates before he tells her that he's trying to stop me from going.
Stay, yeah. Hey, Q, you sent me an email about the Matt Damon character motivation.
I want to get into that. Yes, I do.
I'd answered it, but you didn't reply. So I just want to, and we can also pose the question to the other host as well. So go ahead.
Well, I can't remember what I asked you, but I want to move in. I want to get your guys' opinion on this. So when they go on the planet, first of all, tell me if I got the plot correct, okay? They get to the planet because they've been receiving information from man, that's what his name was, that this was a hospitable planet, right? Although I thought all three planets were hospitable, which is why they sent them there, the three explorers there in the first place, but be that as it may.
It was actually 11.
But then they get there. What's that, man?
It was actually 11. Hello? It was 11.
11 planets?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess what I'm saying is I thought all these planets were already deemed to be hospitable, which is why they sent the explorers there. But anyway, when they get to...
I think that was a theory because they believed based on their proximity from the suns and I guess maybe some other tests, they believed that they were hospitable, which is why they ended up sending the scientists there to verify... Okay. If all of the, because you know, you need the right air, you need water,
right.
Breathable air, okay. You need water, and you need organic life to be sustained.
Okay, so all right, so I could buy that. So when they get to, I'm gonna call it Hoth, okay, and they wake up Matt Damon, right? He's telling them that there's atmosphere on the base of the planet because I assume they're up in the mountains, but come to find out, he was lying because he simply wanted a rescue mission to be sent to him to retrieve him. And I guess he wants to then get to Edmund's planet. He doesn't want to go back home. Right? So Matthew McConaughey, when they're walking along the ridge, and I knew something was up right there, okay?
Yeah.
He calls him a coward when he finds out that Matt Damon had lied about the data, okay? Now, my question is, all right, all these guys, they knew what they were signing on for. They were going into the great unknown, and chances are they were going to die, and they were going to die alone, right? So I could see where Matthew McConaughey calls him a coward because he simply lied because he wants someone to rescue him. But if McConaughey's character, let's call him Cooper, that's what his name was, if Cooper is willing to say, fuck this, I'm going back home because I just saw my kids age before me, isn't he the coward? Because he's going home rather than going to the other planet to check it out first. He's going home, and his going home would doom the human race.
Now, does he decide to go home after his daughter told him that the guy was lying?
Yes.
Wouldn't that imply that then that's why he's going home, right? So he thinks the whole mission was a fraud.
Okay, that's a good point. But then why wouldn't – see, all the motivations there got murky to me. One, why wouldn't Matt Damon, why wouldn't he – once the people get there, why would he continue the lie that the planet is habitable? Was he planning to kill them all? That doesn't make any sense because when he wakes up, I mean, this was a nice moment too. He spends 20 seconds crying on Cooper's shoulder. That was a touching moment. That's what isolation will do to you.
Well, again, I think Matt
Damon. So yeah, you're right. That didn't make any sense.
But Matt Damon's character knew it was a lie the whole time, and he wanted to trick them so that he could take their ship and leave.
Right, but he didn't. Why would, if he was that desperate for human contact, why wouldn't he try to convince them to go instead of killing them?
Well, I don't think he. Again, I think personally, this is just how I read the plot. He didn't. He knew that the mission was a lie.
Who's Matt Damon?
Oh yeah,
Matt Damon knew this. That was the whole reason why he's doing the deception on them, and that's why he took McConaughey out there, is to kill him so that he could take control of the space station ship or whatever and do what he wanted to do. But he knew it was a lie. We didn't know at the time we were watching that until Michael Caine's character dies and tells his daughter. But obviously, Matt Damon's character knows that, and then he says
it. How did he know it was a lie?
He said it early.
Yeah, he stated that he knew that Michael Caine, the Professor Brand, had figured out the formula and he can do it.
Oh, so he's saying that. So that means that Matt Damon, when they were all sent off, he knew they were just being sent to reseed a new planet,
right?
Not to bring people from Earth to the planet.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
But still, okay. But still, that doesn't explain to me why would he want to go to the other planet then and kill off these people and be isolated once again?
Yeah, that one didn't make any sense, because you would need a female. You need a female in order to repopulate the planet.
No, they had those seeds.
They were
going
to repopulate the planet with the embryos.
Well, how are the embryos going to come to human form?
They gave you some gobbledygook explanation earlier
wait.
About how they would accelerate their sales development or whatever. It was whatever, you know.
So they said they were gonna grow. Okay, that's bullshit right there. Like,
it's science fiction. It's not real.
They were gonna grow a human out of fertilized embryos.
I guess so. No. Cloning or something.
Wow. Okay.
If you can believe that they have some ship that seems to just launch itself off of gravitational planets and fly into space, and they can jump through wormholes, which have never been done. I mean, can you not believe that they can somehow clone human beings? And they can have a robot that seems to speak and act as a human being, which would be a breakthrough unto itself. Why didn't they just send robots? They sort of gave a reason why they didn't send the robots, but they do send the robot to go take a mission.
But I still don't understand. Why would Matt Damon's character feel the need? Okay, let me put it this way. I could see him resorting to murder if he first tried to rationalize and reason with them that, look, I know I lied about this data, but I just wanted you guys to come here and help me get to the other planet, because this planet is inhabitable. Why would he want to kill them as opposed to enlisting their assistance?
All right.
Well, I'm trying to figure out, you go into this planet. You crash into an ice cloud, you land onto icy mountain, and then he said there's a surface that's habitable. What? How do you believe any of that? Like, wait a minute. What?
Well, let's talk about some other thing. We spent a lot of time on that. I don't know if we're going to answer your question. One of the other things I'll go to you, but one quick nitpick that I had. A lot of this, and I don't know if this is the theater that I saw it in, but it was like so loud. And yes. I give them props on the audio, like the bass and the rumbling. It was crazy. Like, I have never experienced a movie that was so intense sound wise. I give them credit on that. But some of the dialogue was drowned out by a lot of that noise. And I tend to think now, I wonder if that was on purpose. And the only reason I could say that, because when I think back to the Dark Knight movie, I remember the original audio for Bane was just like drowned out, or you could barely hear it. And I was wondering if that was some sort of stylistic approach he took to this, to say, you know what, it doesn't really matter if you can hear every single little thing that they're saying, because you're not going to understand what the fuck they're talking about anyway. And so I kind of let it go at that. But there were times in this movie that I was a little confused. Certain things that were going on. When you go back to the Matt Damon character with the spaceship, I was a little confused. Like, where did the second spaceship come from? But I just, I think about it now. Maybe he just had his own spaceship there that he could at least fly around the planet in or something. But there was a lot of little confusing sort of things that I just kind of just went with it.
Yeah, like when Michael Caine delivers his speech before he dies, it's a critical moment. And I was like, what the fuck he say? I could not, and I didn't know what he said until, thank God, they repeated it. I think when Anne Hathaway listens to Murph say it was a lie, I did not know what he was saying, but you're right. I put it in my review. And I also say, Hans Zimmer, dude, your music needs to come down in the mix and write some fucking melodies, please. Not all this. I mean, I don't like him anymore. I can't. I don't want him anywhere near a film, piece of celluloid anymore. That was the worst score I've heard in quite a while. So, yeah, Mike, I'm with you 100% on that.
I have a stupid thing that I noticed, and you guys probably noticed it too. Is Anne Hathaway's haircut the same as Sandra Bullock's haircut in Gravity?
I thought it was pretty similar, yeah.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, is that like the standard female astronaut cut, maybe? I don't know, because I was like, wow, it's the exact same haircut.
You could understand, but you can see if you're going into possible zero gravity, you don't want your hair floating around.
Yeah, I know, and I haven't done any research to see if that's accurate, but I just thought that that was – and she looked really weird with that hair like that, too. I don't know. I thought she looked kind of boyish. And you know, one thing we haven't mentioned yet is the brother. Is he non-existent in this movie?
You know what? Him and all the other astronauts, I thought they were done very well. Like I was waiting for somebody to go crazy or something, but that didn't happen. I was like, okay. But I liked the brother. He was very smart. He just was real calm and cool to me. You know, I was like, okay.
And wasn't he the first to go? Or no, he
no, the white dude was. Yeah.
That's right.
Aunt Poole appreciated this. He was the house Negro.
How was that?
Hey, listen. Ain't no way in hell I'm going to be on that ship for 23 years waiting for these two Caucasians to come back.
Where was he going to go? He didn't have no ship.
He could have put himself to sleep.
He said he did. He said I didn't sleep the whole time, but I did go to sleep.
He said, I don't remember hearing him say. He did say that?
Yeah.
Oh, I missed that too.
Otherwise, he would have aged way longer than he looks.
That must have been when the music was real loud. Because I didn't.
He did say that though.
Going back to
Go ahead.
I just want to say real quick. Going back to Anne Hathaway and her look, when the camera zooms in on her and when she reveals that she's in love with one of the other scientists, which is why she wants to go to that other planet. To me, reminded me of Michael Jackson in the Childhood music video.
Wow.
And I was like, that took me completely out of the film.
You know, it's funny. I didn't even realize that was the Catwoman person from the Batman movie. I had no idea who that was.
Wow.
Wow, really?
I'm not familiar with her outside of the Catwoman, and she looked totally different. I was like, okay.
I want to say one. I know we're getting long here, but one more thing I want to say. In 2014, I am amazed that Nolan has been able to keep this movie and all his other movies shrouded in secrecy. It is amazing that, because I walked in, I hadn't even seen a trailer when I saw this movie on Monday. Typically because I avoid them, but I still really hadn't. I hadn't seen anything. I hadn't heard anything about it really. I guess I didn't know that Matt Damon's appearance was a surprise, but I was still like, oh wow, Matt Damon. Okay, I didn't know. So I got to give him kudos just for that alone. I guess he has the respect of his cast and his crew, but I mean he I don't know what he does or how he does it, but I wish more filmmakers and more films were able to do that, and you know that may help them be even better going in not knowing every little thing about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, let's talk about Christopher Nolan.
Can I ask
Nolan
one question,
Mike,
real quick? Mike, can I ask one quick question? I swear. Quick. Okay. Just tell me, because I must have missed this too, and I alluded to it earlier. When they are going towards the third planet, and then Matt McConaughey says we have to jettison some stuff, and they talk about jettisoning TARS, okay? One of the androids or robots, whatever. Did you guys – at what point did they get into two separate ships? I thought they were in one ship when they were trying to dock with the station, remember? And the station was spinning, and she's like, what are you doing? Oh, we're going to dock. They were in the same ship, right?
Well, Matt Damon's ship was there. That was the second ship.
But when did they – I don't remember a scene – the scene that I'm talking about happened right after that, but all of a sudden they're in two separate ships.
Well, yeah, there was no transition scene to show them walking into the other ship, but I assume that other ship was the one that Matt Damon, you know, inaccurately docked to the ship, to the space station.
Okay, that must be what it was, because that confused the hell out of me. All right.
So, Christopher Nolan, he's had a number of movies. You know, obviously, I think the tentpole movie, at least for me, with him would be with The Dark Knight. Is that called The Dark Knight Returns?
Dark Knight.
The Dark Knight, okay. And then, you know, he's had, he did Inception, Dark Knight Rises. And I'm trying to remember, and Q, you may remember, because you're good at this. Like, I was thinking, I could have sworn I was like, you know what, there's going to be a movie he does, because he just has the favor of everyone right now, but he's set up for a fall. Like, it's going to be a movie that's going to, from some people, put him in almost in an M. Shyamalan trajectory. And I kind of feel like, unfortunately, I feel like this movie sort of changes the tide for him a little bit, where I think before you said it was Christopher Nolan movie, but, oh yeah, that's going to be dope. Yeah. And even looking at the trailer for this movie, I was questioning kind of like, I don't know if this is going to be good, because I don't understand what it's about. But for whatever reason, this movie worked for me. Again, I say it now, because Inception worked for me too, but as I saw it a second time, I didn't really care for it. But I'm wondering now, do you think that he is sort of, does this kind of hurt him a little bit? Again, it seems the movie seemed to be performing well. Again, more of a critical take on it, but does this movie sort of like peg him a little bit? Like, maybe you should go back to this or something. So I started Q.
The quick answer, let's see. The quick answer is, what's the box office say come Monday? Okay, that will determine by Hollywood if such is the case. But see, you brought up Shyamalan. The problem with Shyamalan, and you know, I'm still somewhat of a fan of his, was that his movies stopped making money and they stopped being good. That's the problem. So there's a little bit of a difference there. With Nolan, he's revered, I think. And I don't think anyone's going to walk away saying this movie was bad. They're going to walk away saying it's one of those cerebral films I just didn't understand. Because I had a little chat with a family outside of the theater, and we were discussing, okay, what happened here? What happened here? It's going to be one of those. No one's going to say it's a bad movie. No one's going to give it a thumbs down, I don't think. But it's going to be one of those movies that, well, he left that open to our interpretation. Or and Aunt Pooh and I just don't agree with that tactic this time. But most people will say, oh, it could have been this, could have been that. It'll be debated. It won't be considered bad. It'll just be considered something that we discuss from here till eternity. So I don't think this is going to hurt him at all.
All right, Aunt Pooh.
I disagree. I think this movie is too confusing. Everybody that goes out this weekend, they're going to try to describe this film to their friends. And, oh, yeah, I was thinking about seeing that, but I took the kiddies to Big Hero 6. And the people who went to see Interstellar instead, they're going to try to explain this to their friends. And they're going to be like, huh? I will wait to Netflix. To me, it's way too ambitious.
Yeah, I would agree.
Way too ambitious that and he has too many... It's too many layers to this that where you just get lost. And, you know, there are times where you want to be challenged in some aspects, but this film doesn't do it well, in my opinion. And I think it's just too complicated for this to do really huge. I think it might do 150. It might get its money back, but it's not going to be an Inception. And I don't count the Dark Knight trilogy because, I mean, that's Batman. So it's not going to be an Inception. It's too complicated.
All right. Sean Hill.
All right. I'm just looking at his directorial resume here. The Following, Memento, Insomnia, Batman Begins, The Prestige, The Dark Knight, Inception, The Dark Knight Rises, and Interstellar. There's not a dud in the bunch for at least for me. I think my favorite probably non-Batman would be Memento. But no, I don't think this is I don't think this will be a stumbling block for him. As I said before, I think a lot of and I hate to say it again, but you know, 2001: A Space Odyssey. No one understood that movie. You know, when it came out, it was indescribable, and you know, now it's looked at as a classic. Now, not saying that this movie will be a classic, but I think it's in that same vein where it's almost like I can't really describe it. Just go see it for yourself and make up your own mind what things mean and what things are saying. There's that old saying, you know, how do you get over making a bad movie? You make another movie. So he's going to make another movie. He's still going to get work, he writes and directs his own stuff anyway. So I don't foresee him having any problem. I think his fan base probably. I'm hearing. I think Big Sexy said it before we got on that he's hearing both. He's hearing good. He's hearing bad. Friend reviewer I went to see it with. He absolutely hated it. So we're and I'm on the other end of the spectrum. So. I think it may be his most divisive film, but I don't think that makes it a bad film. I just think it's one that, as Ant said, it may be too ambitious for some. It may be that you can't describe it in one sentence, which is what a lot of movies and films like to do today. They like to have that little sound bite. This movie's about this, and that's it. So, no, I think, again, long story short, I think Nolan will bounce back. And for me, there's nothing for him to bounce back from, but if those are the opinions that he needs to bounce back, he will, no problem.
Just looking at the Friday numbers real quick, it's the number one movie. Beat Big Hero 6, opened at 17. Big Hero is at 15. You know, real quick, I see this movie in the same way I see Cloud Atlas. I compare it sort of like that. I can see how people could see it like that. Like, what is this about? There's too much going on. I see it like Sunshine, too, which was not a big movie, but they're very similar in some of the regards of this. And Contact, again. And then even like the themes of this movie, there's a book called The Forever War. It's a classic science fiction book. But it deals with the same sort of interstellar travel. It was... an analogy of the Vietnam War, but it told the same sort of what happens if you go out. The war is so far out into space. By the time you came back, it could be 30 years that went by in Earth and things were different and what happened if it keep going back and forth. So for me, like I said, as a science fiction dude, I've seen this story before. And like I said, a lot of the things that it does, we've seen in other movies. This is a very he almost tries to put the emotional stuff right in your face, like manipulates you to sort of feel certain things because he's going to leave the daughter and oh, they got to do this. And I could see it coming a mile away, but for whatever reason, I like that. I was like, okay, that's cool. But again, I agree with Sean too. I think this is a very divisive movie. You're going to either really get into it or you're going to think it's like, man, this is way too much. Give you the last word, Q-Storm.
No, I'm just going to say, I also don't think, much like 2001, I don't think this movie, see, I mean, you got to break it down. I mean, is it going to hurt him from a monetary standpoint because it doesn't make money, or is it going to hurt him from a fan standpoint?
Well, I was speaking more critically because I think it will probably make money, but I'm just saying in terms of the critical sort of just giving points off the jump.
Right. So critically, no, I don't think it's going to hurt him at all because I think the majority of the American public, they don't like to feel stupid. They don't like to think they don't understand something. So I don't think you'll hear many people say, oh, I didn't understand it, or that didn't make any sense. Oh,
you are hearing a lot of people say that.
Are you really?
Every review I've seen, people say, I didn't understand. It was gobbledygook or all the stuff they're talking about. I didn't really get the whole premise of the time travel. I mean, I've heard a lot of people say, I think even Sean said, not Sean, but Aunt Pooh was saying.
No, I said it. I said I didn't get a lot of it, but
I didn't either. There was a lot of craziness going on.
I said I didn't understand the third act either, but I don't care what people think about me, so that's why I said it.
All right, but I'm just answering your point. I think a lot of people said they don't understand a lot of things in this movie.
Okay, well, I'll rescind everything I just said. See, I just figured, like, you look at 2001, and Sean hopefully can back me up on this. I don't understand. See, that's the difference between that film and this film. I don't understand the ending, but the filmmaker wants me to think. But I have plenty of opinions that I think are valid as to why, as to what happens at the end of that film, because it's so ambiguous. He's not, the filmmaker, at least as far as I can tell, is not trying to tell me what the message is. Here,
well, yeah.
Here, he does not leave it to our manager. He tries to explain it, and it just comes off as like, do you buy it or don't you?
Yeah, it's like you don't understand the explanation.
Right.
He explained it like, okay, sure, whatever you say.
Exactly.
You know what? The corny part about this movie, where I see it, is that I think with his explanation for this movie, and again, so bogged down, he's saying that love is the answer. You know, he told you in the, that scene with Anne Hathaway, which is so damn corny, and I'm glad that Matthew McConaughey shot that shit down, because I was like, this is the bullshit. Because I love him and I got to go here. But at the end of the day, according to the story, she was right, right? Because she's sitting on that planet, and it was the inhabitable planet. Love was the answer. He just turned his back and went to the science route. But obviously the love, right, and same with this daughter. It was all because of the love that they shared that it was able to solve the problem. And I think, again, to me, he puts it so much in your face. I think that point may have been lost, but I walk away with this saying, you know, this was really kind of corny, because he really was trying to tell you that love is the answer, not the science and not all this. Because at the end of the outcomes, all the people who chose love were the ones who won or were right. I just think it was so much other shit that that part of it wasn't as apparent. But in my opinion, that's what he was. That's why I say it's corny to me. But I kind of like that kind of shit. So,
well, I could have learned about. I mean, I can learn about love being the answer just watching When Harry Met Sally. It's a lot less complicated. You know what I'm saying?
Right. That's what I say. It's so weighed down with all this other stuff. Yeah. But all
so
right.
Where do we all stand? Thumbs up or thumbs down. No explanation, no sure. Nothing. Just so, Mike.
Thumbs up.
Q.
Well, if that's the only option. If that's the only option I have, I would say thumbs up. I think people should see it.
Okay. Ant.
Thumbs down.
Thumbs up. So
there you go.
If I could rebut Michael Dean saying, well, not saying, but you mentioned that the box office take on Friday. I'm gonna say that that's gonna be inverse. That more families today are gonna take their kids out to go see Big Hero 6 today and tomorrow, and Big Hero 6 will be the box office winner for the weekend. I just think Interstellar Friday night, I think a lot of parents probably said, nah, we'll take the kids Saturday and Sunday mm-hmm. to go see mm-hmm. Big Hero 6.
I agree. Yeah, the weekend also, projections are that Big Hero 6 would do 56, Interstellar would do 50.
Well, also yeah. Interstellar opened Wednesday too, so keep that in mind as well.
All right.
I take issue with Ample using the word rebut.
You're so childish.
Just say disagree. Just come on, man.
You know, we're supposed to be the 10%ers, all right?
All right. So, man, Interstellar. Definitely, as we can agree, this movie will demand you to talk about it. In a whack movie, you just be like, eh. But there's definitely a lot going on in this movie. Definitely go see it for yourself. Definitely see it on IMAX if you can. It's quite the experience. Got to give them that. As we normally do when we get out of here, we let you know where you can find us online. Mr. Ampu, where can they reach you?
They can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Ampu. I'll have a new column up at 401 Mania looking at the top 8 movies that should be comic books and comics that should be movies. And a new wrestling column at knockoutnation.com and allhiphop.com, breaking kayfabe.
All right, Q Storm.
You can catch me at qstorm.com/lightningstrikes. I just put up my review of Interstellar just last night. You can catch me on YouTube. Check me out at qstormdbs, as in drive-by shooting, and check out some of my travel videos. You can catch me on Twitter at qstorm3476 and on Facebook as Michael Jones.
All right, Sean Hill.
All right, you can find me on Twitter at Hill Street Views, also on Facebook, Sean Hill, and Real Movie Talk, and the blog, hillsreviews.blogspot.com, where I also have a review up of Interstellar next week. And let me wipe a few tears here. The only review I will have will be for Dumb and Dumber 2. So pray for me.
All right. And definitely follow us on Twitter at Facebook. Also, check us out on Facebook. Just look up Podcast Juice. And lastly, for all our listeners, please go to podcastjuice.net/all access. Join up and get access to over 9 years of classic podcasts from us. With that, we will see you next time. Peace.